Hello everyone, this is Don Bain, known as the Gadget Professor, and tonight I'm going to be filling in for Todd Cochran. We have a really interesting show for you. I believe we have an interesting show for you. We have a mixture of gadgets and tech news, and I think you're going to enjoy the show, so you know what comes next. Strap in. Well, hello everyone again. This is Don Bain, the Gadget Professor, and as I said, I'm going to be filling in for Todd Cochran today. So that's an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure. Todd is actually on assignment. I believe he's in Detroit working on some crazy, insane things, as Todd always does, and I'm very honored to be here today. So what I'm going to do is mix things up a little bit. We're going to do some gadgets, and I'm also going to try to let you in on a premium that I did on my last week Gadget Professor show. I don't know if it's still available, but we're going to try to see what happens if you can take advantage of that. So let's open up today, and the first thing actually I want to start off with is I want to mention all the premium codes that Todd actually has on GoDaddy. So if you go to GeekNewsCentral/GoDaddy, you will see some absolutely incredible deals, probably the best deals around with GoDaddy promo codes and coupons. And if you go onto that page, you will see that there's all kinds of things that you could take advantage of if you're looking for a URL or hosting services, pretty much anything to do with internet capability. GoDaddy is probably the number one, I think it is the number one domain registration service in the world. And actually, they're located in Phoenix, Arizona, towards the Scottsdale area where I'm actually located. So by all means, take a look at this page that Todd has on his website and take advantage of those great promo codes. And you want to make sure that you take advantage of these codes. Even if you find a different code, you want to go to Todd's site and sign up through that, because Todd will get credit for that. And Lord knows, Todd deserves it. So let's start off today with an interesting gadget, and I've been awful fond of these, and actually they are SD cards, and they're cards that will fit into your camera or camcorder to record your digitized images. Now what they've done is they've actually made a SD card now that will make your photos essentially wireless. You'll be able to wirelessly transmit them to your computer, which has been around for a while, and actually those are called the iFi cards, but Transcend, who makes some great products, great SD cards, has actually gotten the market now, and they have a brand new Transcend Wi-Fi card, a 16 gig and a 32 gig, and what these will do is it a little different than the iFi card, and we'll take a look at that also, but it's ShareSmart. Transcend's Wi-Fi SD card instantly adds wireless capability to your digital camera, letting you stream photos and videos to portable devices without the hassle of using cables, card readers, or computers. So you can take advantage of the high-resolution digital photographs that you've taken and videos, and you can actually pump them directly to pretty much any device. The Wi-Fi SD app is free to download, so that your app will actually allow you to capture things and put it directly on your camera, your iOS or your Android device quickly and easily. And the Wi-Fi SD card content is automatically organized into a simple file system, so it helps you to very easily organize your photos, which is a big help. And this is all done wirelessly. The direct share mode activates the Wi-Fi card on its own dedicated wireless signal to create a peer-to-peer connection. So essentially that SD card, I thought I had one laying around, and here we do. This SD card actually has a router built into it, a wireless router built into this thing, and it creates its own network, and it will allow you to transfer the files directly to your devices, like your cell phone, your smartphone, your tablet, whatever. And they're very economical, and you can read up about it. I have all the, this will all be in the show notes. Now, the other card that does a similar, performs a similar function and has been around a lot longer is actually the iFi card, and I must have six or seven of these. Now, the iFi Mobi card, which is the highest capacity is 16 gig, whereas the Transcend was double that, was 32 gig. Now, the only difference between the two cards that I could see is that the iFi card will allow you to transfer, I believe, RAW files. So RAW file is a higher resolution file that you could save to your camera. It also takes up more space. So you may want to check that out. It does similar things, and this is they are $100. So you're paying a little bit more money, I believe, compared to the first card. So the Transcend is $59, $59.95, and I'm pretty sure that the iFi card is $99. So again, the difference is, do you want to transmit RAW files? And for most people, it's not an issue. So quite a interesting device, and makes a great gift for college graduates or high school graduates or anybody who wants to make their camera, your point and shoot camera or your DSLR camera, a wireless transmitter. And these cards are just great. So the other thing is, they're class 10, and the class 10 refers to how quickly the image is rasterized, how quickly it's actually processed. If you have a slower card, class 8 or class 6, class 5, the lower you go in class, the slower the processing time. So if you're shooting a lot of photos fast, you want to make sure, especially for high def, you want to make sure that you have a minimum of class 10. So check those out. And again, you can go to Amazon and check out the pricing on them. Now, last week, we did a show on the Gadget Professor called Fix Me Stick. And the Fix Me Stick is basically a USB stick that just goes into your computer. And what it will do is it will erase totally any viruses, malware, spyware, keyloggers, anything that's on your computer. It will immediately take it off. And the way it works, essentially, is you plug the Fix Me Stick into the computer. It's USB. And this works on Linux. So it affects nothing on your computer whatsoever. Obviously, it's used for Windows-based systems. But what it will do is it will actually download and update itself automatically. And it will also take any viruses that you have, run it through the Linux processing, if you will, and strip your computer completely of any viruses without touching your files whatsoever. So these devices actually are available now at Amazon.com, or you can go directly to the Fix Me Stick site and order one of these. And last week, at least, for the first 30 people that ordered this, and if you use the code FixMePROF, FixMePROF, all caps, you'll actually save 30% on this card, plus free shipping. So you may want to check that out. It's a great offer, and I've used them many times, and even though you think you don't have a virus, you'd be amazed what ends up on your machine at the end of a day of work. So check that Fix Me Stick out, and even if you don't get the 30% off, it's still well worth it. They work quite well. Now, here's another interesting utility that we found, and it's called Wix, W-I-X. And you may have seen this actually advertised on TV. This is a free, totally free service that will allow you to create a fantastic looking website. I've actually used this. They have great templates, and they offer other services like hosting and everything. But quite frankly, I would use GoDaddy for that and use one of those coupon codes that Todd has. But Wix is an amazing, easy-to-use software site a website that allows you to create free, stunning websites, and it walks you through the process. As I said, there's lots of templates. It's easy to use. They have beautiful websites, top-grade hosting, which is 100% free. At least that's what they say here. Your website, change colors, change text, change backgrounds, pictures, create unique sites, so on and so forth. You can use it for mobile, Facebook, and blogs. So it's quite robust, to say the least, and everything is explained. It's a nice, clean, crisp website, so you might want to check that out. And if you're interested in creating a website, interesting way to do it for sure. And now what I'll do is, let's get into some news of the day, current news, things that are going on, things that are driving me crazy. And this is kind of a thing that's been going on for years. The FAA is considering to loosen up the personal electronic ban on your electronic devices when you fly. And it's always been astonishing to me that they feel putting on your Kindle, keeping your Kindle on during takeoff and landing will somehow affect the plane. And I just don't see it doing that. I know enough about that the signals that it emits is not going to interfere with anything. Now, using your cell phone on the plane might be a different story, especially if everybody's using their cell phone. And many times you're up too high for your cell phone to work anyway, but let's let that sit where it is. But, you know, turning on your Kindle, using your camera, all kinds of things that they won't let you do during takeoff and landing, they're now going to ease that so you can kind of text and Twitter. And as you know, a lot of the airlines now are charging you to use the internet. So that being said, they are now re-examining it, and there's lots of articles been circulating around now in the media that talk about the loosening of these electronic bans, and I'm pretty much for that. I can understand that during takeoff and landing, the flight attendants want your focus to understand what happens in case of an emergency, but I don't know. I got to tell, if you're up 30,000 feet, 35,000 feet in the air and something happens, you're going to have a real problem whether your Kindle's on or off. So let's keep an eye on that and see what happens. Now, here we have an article from the New York Times, and if you watch the Gadget Professor show, and that would be thegadgetprofessor.com, you know that I always harp on the cloud and safety, and I always inform everybody that you're better off creating your own cloud. When you use cloud services that store your data along with millions of other people, that's a target. If you create your own cloud on your own hard drive, which could be located in multiple different locations for safety reasons, and if your house catches on fire or floods out and your hard drive is destroyed, or your backup is destroyed in your house, they always say that your backup should be off-site where you are. So it should be in your office, your grandmother's house, your mother's house, whatever the case may be. That's the way to have safe backup. So my issue is that probably, I don't know if you could name a service out there, including the FBI, the CIA, Bank of America. You can't name a company that hasn't been hacked. I know when I used to live back east, we had a situation with, I believe it was TJ Maxx, which was headquartered in Framingham, Massachusetts, and they had the largest compromise of data at that point in time in history of the United States for any private business. And what they finally discovered is actually the cleaning crew went in there with sticks, USB sticks, plugged them in, and actually loaded a program on there that would just take all the data and send it to them up to the minute. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people's data, credit cards, social security numbers, all that information that the company, I believe, shouldn't have even had anyway on record, but that was all compromised, and they settled out of court quietly for that. But it was nasty. So now we see that Facebook says a technical flaw, exposed 6 million users. Excuse me. That's a lot of people, 6 million users. Facebook inadvertently, of course, exposed 6 million viewers, 6 million users' telephone numbers, email addresses, to unauthorized viewers over the last year, the company said late Friday. Facebook blamed the data leaks, which began in 2012, on a technical flaw in its huge archive of contact information collected from its 1.1 billion users worldwide. As a result of the problem, Facebook users who download their contact information for their list of friends obtained additional information that they were not supposed to have. Well, here's another example of a company being compromised for lack of, quote, technical security. And as we all know now with the latest leaks coming out notifying all us that we've been spied on for X amount of years, this is really getting out of control. It is out of control, and you really have to be careful what data you're putting on what database and what you're telling about yourself, because it doesn't go away. It's stored forever, and you really have no recourse. You're helpless in those situations, and I think we're all familiar with, I don't know if there's a viewer out there that hasn't had a credit card compromised, so be very, very careful where you put your data. Now, crawling right along here, let's talk about GoToMeetings. GoToMeetings to me is one of the coolest sites out there. It's just a great product. I use it all the time, and summer is almost here. The weather's great. The kids are getting out of school. So many places you'd rather be, but even though you don't want to be at work, business doesn't stop. Everybody's got to be somewhere. So the good news is that you can escape your office and stay connected with your coworkers while you're on the move. And essentially, I use GoToMeetings because I'm all over the place. Right now, I'm coming to you live from Narragansett, Rhode Island, and I talk to Todd frequently. I have clients all over the place. I have clients in Europe, and GoToMeetings just puts them right in front of me. I can see their face, their smiley faces in high def, and it just works flawlessly, and I don't know how you cannot be in business and have GoToMeetings. You basically just send them a little email. They just click on it, and it actually ignites, and bam, you're connected. You can have conference calls, both video and audio, and it works great. And you can try GoToMeetings free now for 30 days, and you have to get this special offer. You hit the try it for free button, and you put the code in. It is called podcast. So if you put the code in podcast and click on that, you will get a free 30-day trial. You have absolutely nothing to use. And you know what? I'm sure after you use this just once, you will find that you're going to be hooked on it. It is a great service. And as I said, it works flawlessly. Now, here's an article that kind of drives me nuts, too. It's Google's effort to skirt regulation may invite more scrutiny. Google's model, if you don't know this already, is don't be evil. But its frequent acquisition of Waze, and I'll talk about that in a minute, reportedly for $1 billion, that's billion with the B, in cash, shows that just because you're not evil, it doesn't mean you can't be aggressive in pushing the boundaries of the law. Now, for those people who don't know what Waze is, W-A-Z-E, it's an applet that you can download on your iPhone or your Android phone or your tablet, and I prefer to do it on the tablet. And it's essentially a GPS coordinate, like a Google Maps, if you will, and it takes you from point A to point B. But in addition to being a GPS map routing system, this also gives you up-to-date information on traffic. You can actually text with people where the traffic is. It tells you where the police are. And this is all done pretty much in real time, and it's totally free. The app is totally free, and it works great. One of the problems I have with Waze is that when I put it on my tablet and I'm in the car, you can text people that, you know, there's a policeman here, or there's a blockage in the road here, or an accident there, and, you know, I just can't drive and text at the same time, which no one should do anyway. So, you know, you want to do that, but this app is really, really cool. It's very accurate, and it's totally free. To me, it's going to put the GPS companies just out of business because it has everything that you could possibly imagine, and of course it's free. So the question now is whether the United States government pushes back and forces Google to give back its new toy. Waze is yet another way of those blockbuster deals for a technology company, meaning Google, with little or no revenue that makes you jealous. 5-year-old Waze has just 110 employees, so Google appears to be paying almost $10 million per employee. Yikes. As for profits, Waze chief executive Norman Bardeen said, "This is Silicon Valley, and we don't talk about those things here right now." Okay, but Google is paying top dollar for Waze, and because it's at the intersection of the two hot fields, map search and social media, users download Waze, user's app, this Waze app, to their phones, and then supply information about locations, routes, traffic, making the maps significantly more intelligent than they would be if you're using just a regular GPS. This is a field where there's believed to be a lot of oodles and oodles and oodles of money to be made in related advertising services. So from that vantage point, the deal has a number of a must business justification for Google. Google is the top dog dominating the turn-by-turn market for mobile maps on the smartphone, and Waze makes Google a bigger dog in that playing field. But perhaps more important, buying Waze keeps the technology out of the hands of course, Facebook, competitor, which has reportedly bid about $1 billion for the company, and also Microsoft and Apple, which have recently bid $400 million for the company earlier this year. $1 billion not only cements Google's leap in the match search area, but it does so in a big way. Google has paid large sums of money to have cars drive around the world to give its maps information of content. We're all familiar with the Google mapping service for sure. But Waze is doing the same thing on the cheap by having the work done by the end users. So I will not continue with this article, but I will post it up on the show notes. And it's quite fascinating how all these things work behind the scenes, and the companies that gather around and buy up other companies and really enhance what they're doing. Here's an article again that kind of drove me nuts, and again, it's about Google, and I'm not bashing Google. You know, we all love them, but this came out just on Tuesday, and Google has asked the United States court to allow them to give the release their data query. And essentially, Google said Tuesday that it has asked the special U.S. court handling the national security investigations for permission to publish a number of government requests for data to the internet giant. In other words, the government has requested, due to all this new spying scandal that's been erupting around the country, they want to make public what the government has asked them for, because of course they do no evil. The court filing in Washington came from a firestorm of protests over the revelations that the National Security Agency has accessed vast amounts of data in a surveillance program under the supervision of the special court, which operates in secret. Google said it already publishes its transparency report data on requests from law enforcement to the so-called national security letters from the FBI. However, the greater transparency is needed, so today we have petitioned the Foreign Intelligence Service Court to allow us to publish aggregate numbers of the national security quests, including FISA disclosures separately. Lumping national security quests together with criminal requests, and some companies have been permitted to do this, would be a backward step for our users. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. The government has all this information, but you know what? So does Google. So does Facebook, and they use all this information to find out exactly what you want, where you're going, how much money you're making, what you're spending it on, what you think you're going to be spending it on, and this is all used as leverage to essentially manipulate, I think, the markets. I do a lot of digital signage, and I know that there's a lot of research and development. Actually, it's in use now where they can actually detect who you are as you're walking by through an eye scan, and or something that's in your wallet or credit card that has a chip. And as you're walking by the digital sign, it will automatically, as I said, recognize you, and it will actually pump out information, things that you're interested in buying, like a watch or a camera, whatever it may be, because it knows your profile based on all the data that you've put in on Facebook and Google and all the other sites. And they actually bought this data, which you don't know about, which was sold, which makes them a profit for the other company. So it's getting a little crazy out there. Now for some fun stuff. This is just great, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but the 3D printing industry has just gone berserk, and it's just in its embryonic stages. And I got to tell you, if I had a couple million bucks, I think I'd be speculating in the 3D printing business. Now, there are a bunch of things that these can make, and now they're coming down in price, so that probably in 3 to 5 years, just like you own a regular printer, you're going to own a 3D printer. And you have seen some of the odd shapes, plastic trinkets on someone's desk, and heard about the first shots that were fired a few weeks ago from a 3D printed gun. That's right, they printed a gun. With every new 3D printed object, the world seems to be getting closer to a future week where we can print out objects like furniture, clothing, human tissue, and I'll talk about that in a second, and even buildings. NASA even recently invested in the technology to print food. The possibilities are staggering. And this article, it was in the New York Times last week, goes into great detail about all the things that are easily made and cheaply made from these 3D printers. And most 3D printers work by threading spools of plastic filament into a heated nozzle that drips liquid plastic onto a surface one layer at a time until the object, typically no bigger than a grapefruit, is formed. Filament can typically run $30 to $50 a spool. Well, very soon Staples will be offering 3D printing services in its store and using full color processes from the Irish company McCore Technologies that make items out of paper instead of plastic. And Amazon will be actually has begun selling 3D printer accessories. So this whole technology, as I said, it's in its embryonic stages, and you are going to see some amazing things. Now, based on that, this just blew my head off. This is an actual ear, and I'm not kidding you. I'll put this article up. This ear was made with a 3D printer, and it hears better than your ears. And there's a little video on this, and I will post this again in the show notes. While some people are using 3D printer to make guns, science at Princeton University are using them to create human ears by combining a bioprinted or by combining bio. Let's try it again. By combining bioprinted organic materials and electronics, scientists have created an ear that can hear things that regular humans can't. Our work suggests a new approach to build and grow biology up with the electronics synergistically in a 3D interwoven format. So they are now seeing that they can actually build body parts. And to us it sounds crazy right now, but boy, where is this going to go? I mean, maybe they'll be able to create lungs or a heart or something like that, and actually save people's lives or allow them to hear again or to see again. So this 3D printing is really, really cool stuff, and this will all be in the show notes. Now here's another article that kind of I laugh about, but you know, everybody's always on Microsoft's back, you know, for not doing this and not doing that, but they just released Office for your iPhone, and this article says yawn, and to me it is a yawn. I have a Droid that I use, the Samsung Galaxy 3. Of course, when I bought that, a week later the 4 came out, but that's a whole other story. By the way, I got that my Galaxy phone, actually it's right here, for 99 cents on Black Friday, so I'm not going to complain, but I just can't. I mean, I can read something on that smartphone, but for me, doing any work, doing any spreadsheets, or writing a letter is... it's pretty painful. I don't mind doing it if it's on a tablet, although I don't love that either. I guess I'm old-fashioned. I like the notebook. I got a full-size keyboard, but you know, doing a PowerPoint presentation on the smartphone, to me, I don't get it. I don't get it. Again, if you're on a tablet, it's certainly better, but I don't think it's a big news item that Microsoft introduced their Office suite on the iPhone, and let's just leave that at that. Moving right along, while we're talking about Office, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you can get the Apache OpenOffice for free, and it does every single thing, including read the Office, Microsoft Office documents and PowerPoint, and everything that was done on Microsoft will be read and edited if you so desire on this OpenOffice. And this OpenOffice is not new. It's been around for years. And Apache OpenOffice is the leading open-sourced Office software suite for word processing, spreadsheets, presentations, graphics, databases, and more. It's available in many languages, and it works on all common computers. I don't know what a common computer is, but it will work on pretty much any platform. It stores all your data in international open standard format. It can also read and write files from other common Office packages, as I just mentioned, and it can be downloaded. I'm not going to take that. That's not for me. It can be downloaded for free and used anytime, anywhere you want it. And I'll tell you, governments, education, businesses, not-for-profits are using this open office instead of Microsoft because it's free and it does just as good of a job. So you may want to check that out. I'll put the link up there for you on that. Now, we're going to switch gears here, and we're going to go to an interesting gadget that was just released a couple weeks ago. And this is put out by a company called NuForce. And what NuForce does with this particular object is make music truly come alive wherever you go. The MMP, the NuForce Mobile Music Pump, is a portable headphone amplifier designed to make your music truly come alive wherever you go. High power with 3x or 5x gain to drive over-the-ear headphones for more dynamic and deeper bass, battery-powered for portable use. So essentially, it comes in black and white, and you're going to plug your headset into one of these jacks, and essentially it's going to blow your ears out. Why someone would want an amplifier to make the sound of your headphones even louder than they are now is beyond me. This sells for $60, and I have not tested it out, but it says that your devices will be increased by 10 dB higher or more, and it also says that it creates a better sound. Well, you know, if it's that loud, I don't think you're going to be able to differentiate the sound. The bass might sound louder, the highs might sound louder, but your ears are going to really take a beating on that. So this is one of these gadgets where, I don't know, on the surface of it, I'm not a big fan of it because yours truly just saw the Rolling Stones last week in Boston, and I had a great time, and I wore earplugs. And I took them out once or twice for a couple of my my favorite songs, and it was so loud I immediately put the earplugs back in because the Gadget Professor used to play in a rock and roll band many years ago, and today I am suffering from not the best hearing because of that. So you want to take care of your ears, and this thing bugs me because it's probably going to be used by young people, and your ears are developing at that point, and you really don't want to make it any louder than it is already. And while I'm on that subject, if you have little kids and they wear headphones or headsets, I would urge you to Google it, and you'll find child-safe headphones and headsets which limit the volume. And when they're young, their ears are very sensitive and developing, and people don't realize the damage that they create when these kids are 1, 2, 3, 4 years old. But taking them to concerts where the music is just blasting, they have no ear protections, the kids don't know, and you're doing them a huge disservice. So just a word of caution on that. Now, here's an interesting gadget. Wireless charging on the go for the iPhone 5. Duracell, we've all heard of Duracell, wants to make sure that you never have to beg for a phone charger or hunt for a power outlet again. This is kind of neat. The copper top battery maker recently introduced a charging case for the iPhone 5 that works with PowerMat, the charging station for mobile devices that was introduced in 2009 and pretty much has gone nowhere. But the PowerMat now charges devices that are laid on it through an inductive technology, and I've actually seen this work at CES, so it does work. Unfortunately, that technology has not been incorporated into Apple devices, so Duracell has come up with a power snap kit which includes the accessory case and a snap battery, both designed for the iPhone 5. This case comes in two parts. The top snags onto the phone, and the bottom includes a lightning connector, which is a connector that's new for the iPhone 5. We all know that. They clip together, but in a single unit would have been better. This case feels fragile, as it would crack easily if the phone were dropped. Once encased, the phone will charge when placed on the power mat. A magnet ensures the phone is aligned properly. The mat chirps when the alignment is correct, and again when the phone is ready for removal. And you were able to charge the phone in 2 hours, according to this test. So, interesting. Duracell is also testing PowerMat in Starbucks locations in the Boston area on a recent trip to Boston. The opportunity was there to check out the power mat stations, which were inlaid in the long tables aside inside Starbucks. They had better been inlaid or else they wouldn't have been there for too long. So interesting technology. Let's keep an eye on it and see where it goes, if it goes anywhere. Here's another article from the New York Times that I found. I get a lot of information out of the New York Times. I'll tell you, on Thursday, they have probably the best tech section probably in the country. I always read it, and I always find interesting things that are up to date. But this article kind of goes back to what I was talking about all through the show, and it's new ways that marketers are manipulating data to influence you. And believe me, there's a lot to this. By now, many people are used to the way advertisements flow them around the web. How the shoes are clicked on here, keep popping up there. But advertisers have come to regard this technique, called it retargeting, as a blunt instrument. Online marketing companies are already focusing on the next generation of targeted advertising. And this goes back to what we were mentioning before. One that collects and analyzes vast streams of data from social media, credit card history, and website habits. Now, when you think about that, let's break that down. Vast streams of data from social media. I've been doing a little research, and I'm going to do a whole show on the Gadget Professor about this, on how many social media sites are out there. And right now, I have counted over 355 sites. Now, obviously, everybody's not using all 355 sites, but I was shocked to see that there's that many sites around the world. And as I said, I'll do a special episode just on those sites. It's astonishing. So everybody's probably using Facebook or Tumblr or Twitter or whatever it is that you're using. And all that data from all those people, you know, you wonder how they do it for free, but that data is worth a fortune. So here's the system. It's one that collects and analyzes vast streams of data from social media, and we know who those players are. Credit card histories. Every time you make a purchase, that goes into a database, as I mentioned before with TJ Maxx, and they're certainly not the only one, but they keep your credit cards. If you go to these online stores, many of them have the ability to say, don't keep my credit card on file, but a lot of them automatically keep it on file and you don't even know that. So every time you buy something, whether it's a TV, a microphone, a camera, whatever it is, that's all documented. Brooks Brothers knows exactly what size you've bought, what color, the whole bit. So this data is then sold to other people who will use that to strategize to direct their marketing campaign to you. So even your credit card has a history on it, a trail that's documented and stored in a server somewhere. And last but not least, your web habits. Well, who do you think has more web habit history analysis than anybody? Could it be Google? Could it be Bing? Could it be all of them? Yeah. So you got three things going there: social media, credit card history, and web habits. Now, that information helps create ads that are increasingly personalized and nuanced. Often these ads are shown to customers in real time based what they're doing moment to moment. It's startling to get prescriptive. Scott Hagren, the chief executive director of Analect, which I guess is analytics, but Analect, a data marketing company that is part of the Omicron Media Group, said one use of the big data is in digital advertising. He is one of many data evangelists on Madison Avenue, urging brands and agencies to think about the process to react to that data quickly and instantaneously. The data is there, but it's more about the processing power. How can you manipulate the data, and how can you get it to work for you? And these companies actually are set up to show you, your company, how to maximize on getting all that information in front of the customer and having them buy something. It's staggering how much information people have collected about you. The amount of information will be available to advertise that's available to advertisers increase exponentially, from credit card, telecommunications company, even from typical brands. Instead of using old retargeting methods such as showing someone an ad for a car that a person just viewed online, the brands are using new technologies to help them decide often in advance whether a consumer should be showing an ad for this, that, or the other thing. So they are actually using this. I have three different cars in mind. How do I launch them to the right audience? Someone asked. In milliseconds, fast technologies can determine whether a person is in the market for a new car or has bought one recently, yielding different types of ad for that person to see. So this article goes into great depth about that, and it's pretty scary. Here's a little another clip. The social media companies worked with advertisers to help segment users based on their Facebook data. Facebook can tell an advertiser that a group of mothers using a site are using a particular site are talking about sending their children to a camp, and an insect repellent manufacturer could create an ad campaign that focuses on children that would use this product when they go to a particular camp. I mean, who would ever think of this stuff? Facebook can also help the manufacturer categorize consumers as heavy or light buyers of insect repellent and determine the number of ads each group will see. Those who buy less may see fewer ads, and those who buy more will see more ads. And it goes on and on and on. So I'll have this in the show notes. It really does make an interesting read. Now, because we've been talking about keeping your data safe and watching your tracks, if you will, this is an article that I think everybody should read, and it's ways to make your online tracks harder to follow. There are a few secrets in our digital world out there today. Many details about us can be and often are tracked, collected, collated, and analyzed. Companies mine personal information in the name of profit, and government authorities, as we all know, mine this data in the name of security. So privacy advocates say most Americans do not know that they're being tracked. That is why the experts argue new laws and policies should be adopted to limit the data collection, increase transparency, and protect everyone's privacy. Otherwise, some people will take steps to protect themselves and others won't. So do we really want to carry, a card of people to protect themselves, a cadre of people to protect themselves, a privacy elite, if you will? And this goes on in great detail on how to protect yourself. What happens if you lose your smartphone? How to set up a ghost email account? How to knock off the cookies that are used to track on your website? Using multiple browsers? Pay cash instead of credit card for certain items? So this is a very informative article, and I think you'll really enjoy it, and I would recommend reading it and actually instituting some of the things that they are talking about, because it's for your safety. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you really got to be more cognizant and more protective of what you buy, where you're buying it, and who's retaining that information, because it's definitely getting out of hand. So I hope you enjoyed today's show. And if you'd like to tune in to The Gadget Professor, again, my name is Don Bain, and I am The Gadget Professor. And you can go to my website anytime at thegadgetprofessor.com and sign up for the newsletter. We come out with a new show every Thursday night. And folks, I hope that you could try to see if you could still get that Fix Me stick and use the promo code FixMePROF, all in caps, and you'll save 30%. I don't know if it's still available to get that discount, because it was only for the first 30 people, but it's worth a try. So I hope you've enjoyed my rendition tonight of filling in for Todd Cochran. It's fun being here, and I hope to see everybody next week. So long. This is Don Bain, filling in for the incredible Todd Cochran at Geek News Central.